Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordechai Joseph. We're today in lesson 398, and we are now in Deuteronomy 19. Last time we're talking about the law of the murderer, or the one that is a manslaughter, guilty of manslaughter, and what Israel was supposed to do about it. In other words, God gave them the instructions sort of how to deal with criminals or those who are by mistake criminals. Well, mistake, that is recklessness. It's a crime that was committed, but it's not a crime that is intentional. Nevertheless, and people need to learn lessons from that. And God made it very plain the way He wants it dealt with. And not as man decided to do on his own. As time went by, they decided, well, they're not going to obey the law of God. They're going to do their own thing. And that's when the concept of prison entered. And obviously, the ones that really introduced that into the nation of Israel were not the Jews themselves, but when the foreign armies came and occupied the land, especially in the days of Rome, you see, that's what they did. And before that, they were supposed to deal with them in accordance with the law of God. That is, allow them to flee to the area where the priests are, and they were going to take care of them. And unfortunately, after that, when the people of Israel returned to their own land, by now, they have been in captivity for a long time, that is, in exile, not having their own land, so obviously they did not make any laws, they had no cities to flee to. They were under the dominion of the administrative or the civil government or whatever country they were in. But when they went back to their land, instead of going back to their land and to their heritage and to their law and to their God, and establishing exactly what was meant to be, from the beginning, well, they basically followed the Turkish government, and then the British government, and Germanic law, in essence. They don't have their own constitution in Israel. It's sort of a hodgepodge of all this, and then Israeli law, that they, you know, as time went by, they included, all put together. In either case, they do not follow the law of God, you see, so they have prisons. They have many prisons. And in those prisons, just like in any nation on the face of the earth, they produce demons. You see? And when they go out, they don't go back into normalcy. But they continue to do what they were doing before that, only now much worse. Because they've been hardened inside. And to begin with, a lot of people that were otherwise innocent, you know, and didn't know much, made mistakes here and there. When they came out, they were full of bitterness and hatred. And that's the way it happens, so the penalty is being paid there. Unfortunately, the whole world is doing that in contrast to the law of God. That's why God said, unless you return to the law of Moses, because one of the things He forbade, in essence, He did not even have to say that, but He did not allow, and by the mere fact that He gave this kind of instructions, He forbade the existence of prisons, of place where you incarcerate people as if they are demons. Put them in cages. You see? You don't produce any good out of it. You produce much more evil. And God says, unless you return to the law of Moses, all of it, I will destroy all of you. You see? And all those people who think that they are doing good, they are pleasing the sight of God, and think they are either Christians or good Jews and Orthodox and whatever it may be, and the practice is, among many other things, you know, the prison system, maybe involved in it, one degree or the other, they don't realize they have a death penalty hanging over their head for being a part of this system. You see? That's unfortunately the fathers of the Constitution of the United States, when they had an opportunity, knowing the law full well, they were very, very well versed in the law of God. This is one of the things they have rejected. They didn't do that. And so we're paying the penalty to this very day. You see? We have a huge industry of prison. And even the private industry is getting into it, and much money is spent on it. Hundreds of billions of dollars that could have been put to good use. And they produce absolutely nothing good from it. You see? That's one of those things. People think they're smarter than God. You know, their creator, their father. And so, this is one of the reasons why God is going to pour His wrath and His fury on mankind, because of what they are doing to His children. You see, they're making demons out of them. if they're guilty, you know, destroy them. As God said, you should. And if they're not guilty, you know, they have just minor, you know, crimes or whatever it may be, you know, make them pay for it, you see. But in either case, do not treat them in that manner. You know, that's a place where young men and women go and they get raped, you know, by the same sex, oftentimes, or others, you see. That's not what God wants for his children. And yet, man, giving himself, his mind, his heart to another spirit, he thinks it's okay. Well, God doesn't think so, and therefore he's going to let all mankind know exactly what he thinks about it when the time comes. So God told them, don't do it, and they do it. All of Israel are guilty of it, the whole earth. And so the whole earth is going to pay the penalty for it. And God made it very plain. Somebody does something wrong, get rid of him. Have no pity on him. But if he hasn't done that, if he's not guilty in the sight of God, in the sight of the law of God, you should not treat him in that manner. And so that's what he says here. Your eye shall have no pity in verse 13, but the murderer, the one that is guilty, and for that matter anybody else who is guilty of any crime, don't have pity, don't have mercy. That is, if he's done it intentionally, obviously you have to consider all kind of circumstances. But when you find out that he's guilty, no lawyer should be able to get him scot-free. And yet the system is, you know, built in such a way by lawyers to do just that. And all that is a crime in the sight of God, and they're all going to be punished for it. You see, every single lawyer is going to have to give account for his wickedness and all the evils that he had done contrary to the law of God, whether he had known it or not, whether he believed it or not, whether he believes that there is God or not. It's neither here nor there. You see? God doesn't need to believe that he exists. He knows he does. And when he comes, he's going to do exactly what he said a long time ago. And nobody is going to escape at that time. So he says, your eyes shall not pity him, but you shall put him, that is, you shall put away the blood of the innocent from Israel, that it may go well with you, he said. You see? And innocent blood is being shed, even by the mere fact that people are in prison. It's just like shedding their own innocent blood, you know, the innocent, in other words, they shouldn't be in a place like that, and when they're being raped, the system is guilty for it. The lawyers attend them there, you know, the jury and the judges, the government. Everybody is responsible for that rape. The society that approves of that is responsible for the abuse that happens there. You see, and all the evils and all the dementing and the perverting and the warping of the minds and hearts of otherwise people that could have been taken care of, rehabilitated properly, you see, educated properly. All that lays on the conscience of all those people who are responsible for it, from the greatest to the least, and all are going to pay for it. A lot of people think they're innocent. We're not innocent. We're all guilty before God for so many things we're not even aware of. And God says, don't do it. Yeah, we do it. And then he continues here with verse 14. You shall not, you see, you shall not, plain words, simplicity in Christ. Don't do it. You shall not remove your neighbor's landmark. And how do people do it? There are many ways to do it. As I mentioned earlier, for example, in the Dust Bowl, in Oklahoma and all those places like that, a lot of people, you know, were just going into the poorhouse. During the Depression, it was the same thing. Any given time, it's all the same. People cannot afford to pay interest, high interest for the bank or the loan, whatever it may be, mortgage. And, well, they just go and take it away from them. The banks used to lend money, and mortgage companies and insurance companies used to lend money deliberately during those days to people who they knew they could not afford to pay it back. And the only reason why they did it, because they knew that's the way they're going to get it back for nothing, you know, for very little. And the government uses zoning laws to get any piece of land that they want, and God says, don't do it, you see, and they give it to somebody else generally, you know, selfish interest. There's always corruption in government. And there are many ways that people do it, either on a personal basis, or on a collective basis, governmental basis, you know, banking, well, whatever it may be. God says, don't do it. You see, he's the boss. He's the owner. He gave it to his children, and he wants his children to have it. Of course, this is in his land, and that's the way he made it, but he's the owner of the whole earth, not only the land of Israel. And so he's going to throw the book at everybody's face, you know, when the time comes. When we stand before the judgment seat of Christ, whether we knew this law or not, generally, most people know that. They know they have no business doing that, stealing from others. All those who pass zoning law in order to get, you know, grab land from somebody else, they all know it. They're not that dumb. They're not that ignorant, so they cannot justify themselves. We all stand guilty before God, as Paul said, all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. Anybody who's involved in that, you know, a lot of widows, sometimes they can't read or write, or they're not, they're not aware of that, or they're old, or whatever it may be, or you know, illegal aliens, or you know, they have a property and somebody else, you know, finds a way of getting it away from them, or they don't know that they needed to pay the mortgage on time at a certain point like that. Well, either the government takes it, the bank takes it, and lawyers take it, and other people come and take it and buy it for a song, as they say. You see, God says, don't do it. There's so many ways to steal and rob your neighbor of his property or her property or of his home, and they do it from the orphans, and they steal it, you know, from the second generation that should have got it from their parents, and the IRS comes and takes it. They do it all over the earth. You see, God says, don't do it. It's a command. In other words, you do it, I'm coming after you. When the time comes, he's going to decide the time, whether in this lifetime or in the life to come. It doesn't make any difference to him. It's not a matter of a few seconds. And even the grave is not going to deliver you from that point. You see, from that judgment. From that wrath of God that is going to be poured on you. And you cannot say, well, I didn't know. When God says, don't do it, don't do it. Simple as that. And how many of us are guilty of doing it? So he says, don't remove your neighbor's landmark. In other words, if he's got a piece of land, or he's got a property, whatever it may be, don't try to get it by whatever means, illegal means. God doesn't want anybody to lose his land or his property. He wants him to be in his property. You see, obviously today we are so mixed up and things are so different, but you have to understand it also again from the point of view, the way it was and the way it became, and the way God is going to deal with it, because he still views it the same way. You should not steal from your neighbor. And when you steal his land, you're going to create a chain reaction, a lot of evil consequences you're not even thinking about. You take somebody's land, what is it going to do now? What's going to happen to his children, to his family? It's going to contribute to the cycle of poverty and crime. Now, you are responsible for it, and that is, you know, it'll come back to you. You'll end up paying for it, and oftentimes, many more times than the land was worth. You see? Or the property. And people don't think about it. And it's a great curse. As a matter of fact, it's such a, you know, an important thing to society if we just sit down to think about all the consequences. What happens when we grab lands from others, when we rob people, their property and inheritance, all the consequences, and what it's going to do to a nation, to a people, to an individual. You see, we don't think about that. But God later on, when the children of Israel, we'll come back to it in more detail by now, we'll just mention it a little bit here. Later on, when we come to chapter 27, this is what he told Israel right before they were about to enter the land. He told them, that is, God told Moses to tell Israel when they come to the land, to have the Levite pronounce certain curses on Israel if they do certain things that they have no business doing. And he basically told them to be divided in terms of the tribes. Six tribes will stand on Mount Ebal, one mount there, and the other, and they shall pronounce a curse. And six tribes shall stand on Mount Gerizim, another mountain there. They're all in Samaria, West Bank, they call it today, Arab land. This is the land of Israel. You see, that's another grievous transgression that the Palestinians have committed against the people of Israel. They removed the landmark. They stole their land. They're squatting in that land. They claim to be the owners of that land, and they have the rights over that land, you see. And then they claim that the Israeli, when they come back to their own land, that they're grabbing it from them. They call it, you know, the occupiers. occupied land. Well, God is going to come after them too, and as he said in the prophecies, many prophets, be it Isaiah, Ezekiel, or Obadiah, or many other places, he's going to bring utter destruction on the Palestinians, and there are going to be only very few of them remaining alive. Only few orphans and widows. You see? Because they have taken the land that is not theirs, they're defying God himself, and they don't realize what's coming. You know, now they're shedding the blood of Judah, the blood of Israel, you see? And they've got terror groups that go all over the world, you know, wherever they can get American interests, British interests, you know, Western interests. And when they find out, when the time comes soon, they're going to find out who the tribes of Israel are. They'll be going after them wherever they are, all around the earth. As it is, they hate the Western world, you know, basically the people of Israel. And God is going to use this curse that he pronounced on his own people upon all the earth. We're transgressing this very law. So here in particular, you know, there are certain laws that Israel, if they were to transgress, this is going to be the consequence for it. And so we read of the first one, they're basically in order of importance in the sight of God, and in order of the damage and the consequences, the evil consequences they cause in the life of the nation, of the people, of the individual. So he said of the first one, the Levites is what they're supposed to say. Cursed be the man that makes a graven or molten image, an abomination unto the Lord, the work of the hands of the craftsman, and sets it up in secret. And all the people shall answer and say, Amen. In other words, the worst thing that he can do is depart from God into idolatry. And so the consequences are going to be the most grievous and the greatest destruction will come upon the nation by doing so. So that's the first one in order. And the second one, speaking about the father and mother, cursed be he that dishonors his father or his mother. And all the people shall say, Amen, because what happens when people, after they forget about God and go to idolatry or do their own thing and couldn't care less about the law of God, and now they go after their parents. They couldn't care less about their parents. You see, they dishonor their parents. The consequences to a society are very, very severe. And they're secondary in order and in gravity to the first one. You see? The whole nation is going to suffer. The family, the individual family, and the whole nation is going to suffer from that very, very severely. You see? The first one is when you forsake God. The second one is when you dishonor your parents. You destroy the family. You destroy so much. You destroy the future of many generations to come without even realizing the consequences of doing that. And the third one in order, what is it? From the point of view of God, what is the most grave thing that you can do in sequence of order after number one and two? Verse 17 we read, cursed be he that removes his neighbor's landmark. You see? And all the people shall say, Amen. And why is it the third most grave, serious consequence and transgression that he can commit? Well, again, because of the severity of this action and the consequences. It disrupts, you see, the economy, it disrupts the lives of a family. It brings a lot of damage, a lot of destruction. And what do you do when you're landless and homeless? You see, a lot of evil comes from that. That's what crime is all about. To a large degree, you see, and all the evils of society, one way or the other, they're linked to these three in sequence of order. So even if you know nothing about God, and even if you have no parents to dishonor, you see, if you rob somebody of his property, of his land, you create a lot of damage there to that family, you see, and there are consequences there that are going to affect you. And so God basically pronounced those curses on certain things that he felt were the most important and the most destructive if people disobey them in the life of a society, of the individual family, of the community, and of the nation, and of the whole world. You see? And so a lot of curses are coming upon the land. And who is the greatest transgressor of this command and the one that is going to reap, you know, the biggest curse? government, the leadership, they are the biggest land grabbers on the face of the earth. Just look at into the statistics of how much the land the government owns in this land. They have no business owning one inch. You see? God didn't give it. God doesn't give the land to a government. God gives it to the people. And that's why you read. When Joshua, and that's by command of God, and there was a righteous man, head of government. When he conquered the land that he was supposed to, with the nation of Israel, after that to divide among all the tribes of Israel, he let them all have their portion, their part, and when they got their part, then he came and asked for something for his own family. He was not a land grabber, you see. But in contrast to him, we see another king in Israel, and a later ruler in the northern kingdom, King Ahab, who was a different type of a person. Well, he himself, in essence, initially did not begin that way, but with the help of his wife, you know, their own kind of help, unfortunately, Jezebel, he became a land grabber. And so we read the story here in 1 Kings chapter 21. Let's go through it so we can see what God thinks about these kind of people that remove the landmark and the curse that it brings on them, you see, and the severe consequences. In chapter 21, we read in 1 Kings, and it came to pass after these things that Naboth, the Jezreelite, or from the valley of Israel, Jezreel, had a vineyard which was in Jezreel next to the palace of Ahab, king of Samaria. So the king had a palace in that territory beside his palace in Samaria. And this Naboth, unfortunately, happened to be in the wrong place. Verse 2, so Ahab spoke to Naboth, saying, give me your vineyard, that I may have it for vegetable garden, because it is near, next to my house. So what? You don't take somebody's land just because it is near, you know, next to your palace or home or whatever it may be, and you want to have a vegetable garden there. And that's a vineyard, that's inheritance, that's the land of that of Naboth, you know. That's something that is going to be passed on from generation to generation by decree from God, who divided the land among all the children of Israel. And so, notice what is going on here, and at least what King Ahab recognizes, in spite of the fact that he's asking for something that he has no business asking to begin with. And so he says, you give me the vineyard that I may have it for vegetable garden, because, well, it's near, next to my house. And he said, and for it, I will give you a vineyard better than it. Or if it seems good to you, I will give you its worth in money. And so at least, Ahab, with all of his wickedness, still recognizes the law of God. Do not remove the landmark. But since he wants it anyway, he's still not grabbing it at this point. He's offering him a better vineyard, which again is contrary to the law of God that said very simply, don't remove the landmark. He says, well, unless you want to exchange land or whatever. He just said, don't. I want a man to stay there. Like his forefathers were in that land, I want him and his children to remain there. Otherwise, you begin to do these kind of things, you know, land exchange and things like that, and well, you still end up with the same mess somewhere down the road. God didn't want that. God wanted every nation, every people, every family in their own God-given land to remain there forever. You see? Not just one generation, two or three, but as long as they exist, until the whole plan of God is totally finished and all become spirit beings, until that time, God wants people to remain in their own land, not go somewhere else. Not take it from somebody else. Not go on the conquest, you know, and grab somebody's land. And when people don't understand it, obviously they do not consider the consequences. And that's in essence what in the land of Israel, that's what you have there. Those people do not understand it. God gave that land to Israel forever. Muhammad made it very plain in the Quran several times. And the people that claim to follow him, they don't understand that. They couldn't care less. They don't believe in it. Oh, they claim to be Muslims, faithful, you see. And yet, their own actions and their own thoughts and their own politics and everything that they do contradict those words, and that makes them hypocrites. One of these days they're going to pay the penalty for it when God himself is going to step in, the one they call Allah, and he's going to let them know what he thinks about it. And he already said that long time ago what he's going to do about it. He's going to blot them out from under heaven. If they refuse to obey him, they're going to have to pay the consequences. He's not going to play games with them or anybody else. When his own nation, his own people, transgressed his law, just like this King Ahab is going to do here, he threw them out of the land, finally. In between, brought lots of punishment on them. And he's not going to be merciful to others, to the enemies of Israel, to the other nations, when he was not to his own people, when they transgressed his law. And so, at least Ahab at this point is still willing to exchange money, even though he knows that's contrary to the law. And he's not obviously considering the consequences of that. And so Naboth says in verse 3, but Naboth said to Ahab, the Lord forbid that I should give the inheritance of my fathers to you. He's reminding him of the law, that himself should have been aware of it, because he, being a king, according to the law of God, was supposed to write the book of the law and meditate on it day and night, so his heart is not lifted up above his brethren. And obviously he wasn't doing it, because you know he and all those who were before him that went into idolatry and rejected the God of Israel, not totally at this point yet, you know, still for a long time, maintained a good measure of the knowledge of God and walked in it, and they still did their own thing, including idolatry. They were not totally yet out of it, and that's the reason why God still could talk with them and communicate with them and still bless them to a large degree. And he sent them prophets, including Elijah, one of the greatest prophets of Israel, was sent to the northern kingdom of idolatrous Israel, not to Judah, and Elisha, and there were many other kings. They were still the people of God. You see, they still worshiped God to a degree, of course in their own way, which was not acceptable to him, you know. They thought that they were worshiping God, and then they had Baal and idols and things like that. And of course, not all of them were evil, because in the days of Elijah and Elisha, there were a lot of prophets of Israel, that is, prophets of God, that followed Elisha and Elijah right there in the midst of Israel. But this king does not realize that it is God who said that, and that's what Naboth reminds him. The Lord forbid that I should give the inheritance of my fathers to you. It doesn't make any difference who you are. You see, when you've got God on your side, even the emperor cannot dislodge you from your land. And if he does, God is coming after him. And what is an emperor? What is a government? What is the most powerful government on the face of the earth? What are all human beings put together in comparison to God? As I said in Isaiah chapter 40, they're all put together, all the nations of the earth, less than a drop in a bucket. You see? All the men think that they're great and mighty and all that, until they stand before the judge of the whole earth. And so he says, I cannot do it because God made a prohibition. Don't remove the landmark, which means not only you cannot do it to me, I cannot do it to myself. That's contrary to the law of God. I cannot do it to my family, to my descendants. It's not my land. It belongs to God. And governments don't understand it. And certainly the government of the United States has no knowledge nor understanding of that. And that was one of the major mistakes of the fathers of the Constitution, by not putting it in the Constitution and teaching the nation. You see? To remember that and to know that, and to begin with, make sure that government itself would not be the biggest transgressor of this law. Of course, in this land, you know, the land was not divided according to the land of Israel, among all the tribes of Israel. It was a different circumstance there, but at the same time, they knew the law of God, and they should have divided it among all the nations of Israel. Now, that is, among all the people that were at the time, and those who were coming later on, give them more land. They knew that they were Israelites. They were not ignorant of that. A lot of people don't realize that. The fathers of the Constitution knew where they came from. As you can see in many sources in history, just recently I read a book written by the, you know, he's the prince, and if the British would allow him, he would become the king of Scotland. He's the rightful heir of the throne of Scotland, Prince Michael of Albany, and he wrote a book, and I read that one. He wrote three books, I believe, with the same title, The Forgotten, I think they call it The Forgotten Monarchy of Scotland. And you can go to the Amazon.com and get that book there, Forgotten Monarchy of Scotland by Prince Michael of Albany. Well, he's revealing a lot of details there, writing a history of the throne of Scotland and linking it to King David with the marriage of the one that became King Hermann, who went to Zedekiah, you know, a relative of his, King Zedekiah, the last king of Judah. And right before the fall of Jerusalem, he married his daughter, Tamar. And so, in essence, you know, he's linking the royalty of Scotland to the royalty of David, because the Scottish people were the descendants of Zerah, the twin brother of Perez, the father of all non-Jewish people today, you see. And he's basically making it very plain, because they've been booted out of England by another branch of David from Germany. You see, the ones that are ruling to this very day, you know, Queen Elizabeth came from that line, the House of Windsor. And, you know, in a very illegal manner, that's the way it was done there. But anyway, they remained and they went to Europe. And he recounts an awful lot of the history there. Very interesting book to read, even though it has a lot of history in it. But he makes it very plain that a lot of those people in Scotland were all Jews. Jews from the line of Zerah, not from the line of Perez. Well, many of them, what they couldn't do there in Europe, that is in England, because they lost the throne of England. They used to be in charge of it, the throne of England and Scotland and Wales and France. You see, they're all related. Well, many of them came to this country, the United States, and they were among the forefathers of the Constitution. They were the prime engine behind it. A lot of people don't realize that. If not for the Jews from that line, you know, there would have been things would have been different in this country. And those people knew their heritage. They knew where they came from. You see? They knew that they were descendants of that royal line of David. You know, linked between the two families of Judah, the two sons of Judah. And they knew the law. They knew their heritage. They knew that they were Israelites. They knew the law of Moses. They knew that unless they return to the law of Moses, destruction will come upon them too. They were not ignorant. And so they did a lot in that direction. And of course, as usual, as time goes by, there are always efforts to suppress this information, knowledge, and understanding, as it has always been, by oftentimes the great whore, you see. And there was a lot of deception there to begin with anyway. And the harlots that were part of it to a degree, even though they departed from it a long time ago, 500 years earlier, but still retained a lot of the same information, that is, misinformation. You know, as time went by, people forgot about all these things, but these fathers of the Constitution should have known better that this is the law of the God of Israel. And this is what the king should have done. And the first king, you know, in biblical terminology of this country, was Washington. And he was a descendant of that royal line of Scotland. In other words, he was a Jew from the line of Zerah, not from the line of Perez, just like God made it very plain in Jeremiah 33, that David will never lack a man to sit on the throne of Israel, be it in Britain, the British Isles, be it in the United States. And the monarchies that reigned over Europe were all related to the house of David, all came from one single family, you see. All came from one family that created, in essence, all the royal houses of Europe, including Russia. And that came from a prince of Israel, from Judah, you see, from the line of Zerah, and also related to the line of David, that basically came from the Caspian area and established all the royal kingdom, all the royal houses of Europe. Anyway, you know, the fathers of the Constitution since we're not in in the field of history here, but biblical knowledge, just bringing some information here and there. But he, the first king of Israel, well, this land of Israel, George Washington, knew this law, and he should have established this law in accordance with the law of God. We said that when the king ascends to his throne, he should write the book of the Torah and meditate on it day and night. So he was not ignorant, and many others were all, in essence, Jews, you see, because of their lineage to the royal house of Scotland. You see, they should have known that. Well, they haven't done that. And so we're paying the penalty to this very day because of that, where things could have been totally different in this country. And could have taught the whole world, at the same time to do likewise. And so far, this is what we see here. God said, don't remove the landmark. Well, Naboth is telling the king, you can't do it. I can do it. Because God, why? God forbids that I should do it. And obviously forbids you to do it too. And so Ahab went into his house, sullen and displeased, because of the word that Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him. For he had said, I will not give you the inheritance of my fathers. You see, and he lay down on his bed and turned away his face and would not eat, would eat no food. Just like a little child, didn't get what he wants, didn't get the toy he wants. But at least he recognizes the law of God and he still has enough fear of God and has enough knowledge of the law of God not to transgress that law of God. Because, you see, he was not going to force it on him. He just asked him, he asked him probably nicely, you see. Well, government today doesn't do that. They want a land, they want your land, they want your territory, they want your house, they want your property, and for that matter, the banking industry or the insurance industry or the mortgage industry and all that, they sit in their own little rooms there, smoking and doing whatever they want to do there, and they plot how to grab your land. That's the way they function. You see, the IRS does the same thing. They couldn't care less about the law of God. They have no fear of God. They have no knowledge of God to begin with. And they are not innocent before God, every single one of them that has done it. They are guilty before Him. All those things have been recorded. God knows them. And when the time comes, in the day of judgment, the books are going to be thrown at them, in their face. And they're going to pay the penalty for it, for doing it. You see? And a curse is upon the whole land because of that. Not only individuals. Everybody's cursed because of that. Because all of Israel, the whole nation, all the tribes were supposed to say amen to every curse. And they did. And so all of us are guilty into this very day. And we're all paying the penalty for it. Whether we've done it personally or not. And so what happens here? Well, he cannot get it, but his wife, his wife is a Gentile woman. Actually, she's not, well, she's Gentile on one hand, but on the other hand, she's a daughter of the king of Tyre. And who is the king of Tyre? Who are the people of Tyre and Zidon, those people there at that time? Phoenicia. Again, historic information there. I think we went through it before when we covered the role of Edom, of Esau, twin brother of Jacob. In the history of Israel. Well, these people were Edomites, Phoenicians, that's what they were. Of course, there were also the Hamitic people there, but the Hamitic were not Phoenicians. Why? Because phonic means red. So only the red people, only Edomites, could be called Edomites. It's as simple as that. And so in essence, he was marrying a daughter of Edom. Of course, the Bible doesn't call that territory Edom. You see, because there is a territory of Edom, but the Edomites went to Babylon and they went to here and they went there, went all over the place. And God was not about to call every land Edom. You see, so when He deals with those people, He calls them by whatever they call themselves at the time. You see, a lot of people don't realize that. Again, there is an awful lot of historic information there about this matter, about this subject, and I'm not going to discuss that at this point here. And hopefully one of these days when my book is published about the Middle East, the history of the 4,000-year history of the Middle East and all the people there and the final result of it, there's devoted a whole chapter just to this one, actually several chapters, but one historic chapter to this, information about the Phoenicians and who they are and their link to the Spanish people, obviously. and the end of the story too. And when that happens, I hope it'll be made available to many. Anyway, at this point, Jezebel, an Edomite, a daughter of a king, she says, "Hey, I'll show you how we do things. You know, Edom is bloodthirsty. That's the way they function. Conquistadors. You know, they want to give it to you. We're going to get it by the sword. That's the way we function." And so, she even, put down her own husband. She said, "I mean, you don't know how to do things. Let me show you how we do things in our country, in our land." And so she rebukes him, in essence, by saying, verse 7, "Then Jezebel, his wife, said to him, 'You now exercise authority over Israel? Is that the way you're going to rule Israel? In other words, what do you care about the law of God?'" That's what she's telling him. Forget about God. Let's do it our own way. Let's do it like the Gentiles. That's what Christ was saying. I don't want you to rule my people. I don't want you to be in charge of my followers as the rulers of the Gentiles. They exercise dominion authority over them. "That shall not be the case among you," he said, "for all of you are brethren. You've got only one master, and he's in heaven." And in essence, he's telling them, "If you don't behave yourselves, I'm coming after you." And he does, and he did, and he will. You see, and here is this Edomite, a daughter of brother Edom, that later on became, in essence, the Edomites, along with others, the champions of what became known as the Catholic Church. And again, a lot of history behind the scenes that a lot of people are not aware of. Obviously, we know about the Spanish people, they're very strongly there, and all of Latin America, you see. But there's more to it than that. But, this is not the place to discuss that. And so she says, "Is that the way you're going to exercise authority? Authority over Israel?" Well, a lot of people love authority. Some people think that that's what an apostle is. As some would say, an apostle is a man, being sent, bearing authority. That's the main thing. That's not an apostle. It's just a messenger boy, like Moses. He just tells you what God told you, that's all. The authority is of God. He never takes it to himself. And to obey Moses doesn't mean to obey the man. That means to obey God, obey the law of God, not the law of man, not the authority of man, not the opinion of man. Well, that's the way the Gentiles think, and Christ warned his people, he warned the ministry from ever behaving in that manner. And yet, that's basically what you see in the religions of this earth. And how many in our midst are behaving that way? Like Gentiles. That's talking about their own kind, their own example. Gentiles, all it means is nations. In other words, they act like the nations instead of the nation of God. There's nothing derogatory about Gentile. God called Abraham and told him, "I'll make you a big goy." Goy means Gentile. It means a big nation. That's all it means. And Jacob is called oftentimes a goy also. That means a nation. So let's understand that too. We're not talking about derogatory or contemptuous concepts here. Well, I said, "Well, I'll show you how we do things." He says, "No, is that the way you exercise authority over Israel? Arise, eat food, and let your heart be cheerful. I will give you the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite." God says, "Don't do it." She says, "Who cares about God?" You see? God says, "Don't do it." The government says, "Who cares about God?" God says, "Don't do it." The banking industry and insurance and mortgage companies and the IRS say, "Who cares about God?" All right. As the apostle Paul says, as the prophet says, "Prepare to meet your God, O Israel." You see, our God is a consuming fire. It is a fearful thing to fall into the hand of the Eternal. And nobody is going to escape, and nobody is going to say, "The devil made me do it," or "I was just obeying orders," or "Somebody else told me that, I was just a citizen, I was just a whatever." No excuses. You disobey the law of God, you will have to pay the penalty for it. Now, there isn't going to be any cheap grace given to you, or mercy. As people talk about grace, you can do whatever you want, get away with murder, all you have to do is get on your knees, say, "I'm sorry," and God gives you grace. Oh no, it doesn't work like that. God gives grace only to the humble, to the repentant. And oftentimes, even the repentant God, generally speaking, God makes the repentant pay the penalty too, just like he made David. Yeah, David did what he did and said, I'm sorry. You know, I'm guilty. I've done it. God says, okay, I forgive you. I forgive you for the sin, not the penalty. The penalty you're going to pay for the rest of your life. The Apostle Paul also said, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to persecute your people. I didn't realize these are your people and you are the Lord. I was ignorant. God says, okay, I forgive you, Paul. You know, he was Saul at the time, became the Apostle Paul, but he made him pay through the nose for the rest of his life. Well, anyway, we shall stop at this point. Again, greetings to all of God's people. Mordecai Joseph, until next time.